Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beat me up.
Hey, D.A., I'm thirsty, man. Are you beating me up for a cold one?
Hey, D.A., what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beat me up.
D.A., what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beat me up.
What's going on, D.A.? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My co-worker's a jerk. Oh, just beat me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live for the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day.
I'm a little wet, a little drippy.
I feel a little wet, a little drippy on a Friday. It's a little wet, a little drippy here in New York City. A lot of rain today. But going into a weekend means it's a Target demo Friday, so we're going to hear what you guys are doing, what you're up to, how you're listening to the show. Let me know what your plans are for the weekend, and we will read them in the second or the final hour of the show, rather. So you can either hit me up on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDAShow, or on Twitter, DA on CBS. Joel in Green Bay tweets, that was some delightfully entertaining crap. Thanks, DA and Brad. Thumbs up. Loved it. Such a good segment. Had such a good time. Mike tweets, DAW crap was actually the idea behind WKRP in Cincinnati. Also, I love outside the box thinking right here on the show and all CBS Sports Radio. That's interesting. I love WKRP. Was that what that was supposed to be? KRP was crap?
I don't know, but that's a clever idea.
That's pretty cool. I mean, there's so many good episodes of WKRP. So I'm glad you guys feel as though this is a creative outlet here on the show. And that's one of the reasons that I really love working here is that they have allowed me, my bosses in here at CBS Sports Radio, to quote unquote explore the space. I mean, one of the things is when I was coming through school, I knew I wanted to become a sports broadcaster, but I didn't know where or why or where or what it was going to be. So I thought maybe play-by-play could be my future, and I did a lot of play-by-play at the student radio station in Syracuse at WAER and when I was in high school for cable access. And when I was coming through school, I thought maybe I could do sports television, be an anchor, do highlights like SportsCenter. I used to love watching the big show with Patrick and Olbermann. I loved Craig Kilborn's style when he was doing highlights. I loved that kind of irreverent mid-90s SportsCenter style. I thought maybe I could do that. But I never thought I would do sports talk radio, ironically, because I didn't like the way that sports talk radio was done. I'd only heard it when it was done in a really conventional way. I said, that's not really my style. I don't really feel like spending 3 or 4 hours every day just hammering topics or fighting with callers or yelling over guests. Not my bag. That wasn't where my heart was. But lo and behold, one of the great lessons in my career was when I was coming up, I just wanted to be on the air. It didn't matter where it was. It really didn't. I would have gone anywhere. You should have seen the places I applied for jobs for when I came out of school. I would have gone anywhere. And I was turned away. I was told no at Cedar Rapids, in Sioux Falls, in El Paso. I couldn't get jobs. But I said, I'll go anywhere. And so I was driving an hour and a half both ways, junior and senior year to Rochester when I was in school, just to be on a commercial radio station. I did pre and post game for a soccer team, the Rochester Raging Rhinos, just to be on the air. And then I got the job down in Fort Myers, Florida. They could only guarantee me maybe 10 hours a week. I was going to do pre and post game for the Arena Football 2 team, not even the full Arena League, the minor league of Arena Football, the Florida Firecats. But I said, I'm on the air. When I went down there, they just wanted me to fill time, to host shows. And so when I was down there, I hosted 1 hour a week on the NFL or 1 hour a week on college football, or sometimes I would fill in. And I said, wait a second, this is actually what I love doing because I could just fill the space creatively. And the one thing that you realize in 2017 looking at sports media is it all looks exactly the same. I mean, look at First Take and Undisputed. They are simply the same exact show. It's Bayless and Shannon on one, and then Stephen A. and Kellerman on the other, and they're the same exact show on two totally different networks. The same exact show. Look at how all of the talking head shows on FS1 or ESPN are built and look and graphically what they do. It's all the same. I mean, SportsCenter with Van Pelt is slightly different than the SportsCenter at 6 or the SportsCenter at 11, but largely, I mean, it's kind of the same exact thing, just dependent slightly on the personality. But CBS Sports Radio, I mean, and listen to other network radio shows. Now, local, I think maybe you're allowed to color outside the lines a little bit more. But in national, you're really not. And so they've always allowed me to do that, which I always appreciate, which is why I love doing this show. So hopefully it comes off that this sounds and feels different than other radio shows. So on that point, can we cue up the brand new laugh montage? Because I think that would be the perfect moment to cue this thing up. You know, we have liked to collect all the laughs on air that we have had here on the show. And we've had a couple of good ones over the last week or so. So Pete the Body Bilotti and I have worked together to make the brand new laugh montage bigger and better.
Let me try again.
That'll be in the laugh montage.
Awesome!
That never not gets me. It always gets me. And I've heard that, I mean, 100 times. And the laugh montage always gets me. Oh, that's good. That's just good eating right there. That is good eating. So NFLPA Executive Director, head of the NFL Players Association, Damaris Smith, tells the MMQB of Sports Illustrated he fully expects a work stoppage when the current CBA expires in 2021.
I think that the likelihood of either a strike or a lockout in 21 is almost a virtual certainty.
Virtual certainty. Missed games?
Well, I don't know now, but I mean, look, let's look at our history, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the owners do a deal in 2006 and opt out in 2008. Mm-hmm. We do a deal in 2011 with no opt-outs because we like the benefits under the current deal, and we didn't want to give the owners an opportunity to opt out and take back the gains that we currently have. If there is no renegotiation of the collective bargaining agreement and we reach 2021, there is no uncapped year, right? Mm-hmm. Because last year, the last time we went through it, we found out that the owners lied and cheated about the uncapped year. So why would I do that again? All of the mutual benefits that were supposed to happen as a result of the opt-out didn't happen last time. Owners colluded with each other, and we found out they colluded with each other, and all of the bad things that went to the players happened, and none of the bad things that went to the owners happened. So we have a new deal where if it doesn't get fixed, you head into a certain small A Armageddon.
Damaris Smith, NFLPA Executive Director. Now, when you are this far out and you are threatening a work stoppage, a lot of that is posturing. I mean, I don't know if Demaurius Smith could say with any certainty that 4 years from now, they're definitely going to have a work stoppage. I don't know how that's even possible. I think what you want to do now, if you're the NFLPA, and unions do this a lot, is, you know, saber rattling. This is trying to get people's attention and get the owner's attention and get employers' attention to say, hey, we're unhappy now. Prepare for this. Note that when this is coming is in the midst of another player suspension appeal, this being Ezekiel Elliott. You had the Tom Brady situation. You had the Ray Rice situation, the Adrian Peterson situation, and now the Zeke situation, where guys are suspended. They feel unfairly so and want to fight that. And that's a big part of this. I'm sure, I mean, look, the NFLPA, and I don't agree with this tact at all. I think it's lowbrow. I think it's ethically a terrible idea. But this is unfortunately where the NFL is. I don't like that the NFLPA is putting a potential victim of domestic violence on public trial. If you want to question her credibility and you want to question her accusations, you can do that privately. You don't need to drag her persona, her life, her credibility through the public mud, because guess what? Most people will side with the athlete because they know the athlete. We have no context. You don't root for the female in a relationship with an athlete. You root for the athlete. Nobody's out there going, oh yeah, man, I just bought the jersey of Ezekiel Elliott's girlfriend. I hope she wins my game for fantasy football in week two. You know, nobody does that. So dragging her through the mud publicly, which is now what the NFLPA wants to do, I think is a really lowbrow, lousy, gross move. But the NFLPA is PO'd about this suspension, saying Goodell's overreaching again. You've got that to fight. You want to fight the simple fact that out of the four major sports, the NFL is the only one with non-guaranteed contracts. You have the most violent of the four major sports, and a lot of this money, if you get injured, is out the window or your career is over. So there's a lot of fights here. The NFL also hates the preseason. The owners do. They want that to be regular season revenue. The NFLPA does not want to play more than 16 games. You have now the NFL that wants to put a team in London. My guess is that the NFLPA doesn't want a team in London, because then that means there's 50 of its players that has to relocate potentially to a different country and live 7 hours away from the mainland. You know, there's a lot of stuff here that the NFLPA has gotten beaten over the head on. Now, I'm not sitting here saying these NFL players don't make a lot of money. They have a nice life, but safety concerns, concussion concerns, I mean, pension stuff, because of what we know now, there's a lot of stuff where the NFL players are way worse than the other three leagues. And so it wouldn't surprise me at all if there's a labor stoppage, because, you know, the players keep understanding that look at the money the NBA has, and look at what the money the MLB has. I mean, guys are making $30 million a year. In the NBA, guys that aren't even very good are making $18 million a year. That's a crazy amount of money to make in the NFL. That's only quarterback money, basically, or the most elite of the elite. And you had NFL players griping about that when the NBA contracts came up. There's all this money being spent on NBA players that are a fraction of the talent that the NFL players are that are not making that money. So there very well could be a labor stoppage. And I talked about this yesterday, and I'll say it again. I believe historians will look back. We will all look back 25 years or beyond from now and look at this era and say, this is when the NFL started kicking the bucket. This is when we started distancing ourselves from this league. Because if there is a labor stoppage coming up here in a couple of years, it's just going to be another thing. Labor wars, health wars, suspension wars, domestic violence wars, relocation wars, stadium wars. It's a never-ending Real Housewives, and it sucks. It's never-ending with this league, and this could just be the next part of it. When we come back, college football's right around the corner. Who has the best non-conference schedules And dessert coordinator Brad Heller will give us his dessert power rankings. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You're listening to the DA Show, only on CBS Sports Radio.
College football is just around the corner, starts up Labor Day week, and I can't wait. One of the things I love about this job is also doing CBS Sports Radio's Sunday Morning Football Show right here on the network, Sunday mornings beginning at 9 a.m. Eastern time. We do it 9 to 11, and college football oftentimes gets swallowed up a lot of parts of America by the time Monday rolls around because of the NFL action. And so Sunday Morning Football allows me to react to all the craziness that happened on Saturdays before we even get into the NFL stuff. And so I'm really excited about this college football season. I always am. It always gives me a good hop in the step. And Jerry Palm from CBSSports.com always kind of brings together the numbers, the advanced metrics of the teams. And he put together the best non-conference schedules in America. Now, one of the things that bothers me most is that there still isn't enough of an incentive to have great non-conference action. The incentive is financial, that game, now usually played at neutral sites, brings in a ton of money, either from TV or the site that holds it, if it's in Dallas, if it's in Atlanta, if it's in LA, whatever it is, usually it brings in a big, you know, Soldier Field, Lambeau Field, MetLife Stadium. NFL stadiums bring a neutral site, big teams together, and they get a big payday. But there's still not the incentive with the college football playoff. And once we get to eight teams, I think finally you will see more schools take more chances. Because right now it's still such a small window. Like in basketball, great schedules help everybody. So you're encouraged to have a better schedule to get in, but the field is 68 teams. So you can afford a loss. It's not so punitive. In football, where there's four teams, it's really punitive to have one or two losses. So when I give you the best non-conference schedules in America, you're going to laugh because you're going to say, that's a good non-conference schedule? That's the best? Out of the big-time schools, because, you know, you've got smaller schools that play really good non-conference schedules because they take that big check from big schools. From the biggest schools, here is the best non-conference schedule, according to Jerry Palm, doing all the numbers. Florida State. And that's because Florida State will play both Bama on Labor Day weekend and they have Florida in the annual rivalry game. But in between that, it's Delaware State and Louisiana Monroe. But hey, give Florida State credit. Because they play Florida every year, they don't have to have a huge non-conference opponent, and they took Alabama. So we appreciate it. The second best non-conference schedule in America is USC because they play Texas and Notre Dame, and they'll have Western Michigan, who, with the previous couple of years, were very good, but who knows now with the new coach what Western Michigan is going to be. But USC, Texas might be good, but might not be. Notre Dame's coming off 4-8, and that's the second best non-conference schedule in America. Pitt is at number three, because they've got Okie State and Penn State. Solid. They've also got Rice and Youngstown State. Texas has USC, as we mentioned, and Maryland and San Jose State. Can you believe Texas is the fourth toughest non-conference schedule? And that includes Maryland as their second toughest opponent, who's a lower-tier, non-entity team in the Big Ten. Florida's at number five. They got FSU and Michigan, solid. Northern Colorado and UAB as well. Oklahoma only really has Ohio State, and that puts them at number six. They've got Tulane and UTEP. UTEP's good, but not a Power Five conference team. It just goes to show you, you could be a top 10 non-conference schedule in the nation and only play one other Power Conference squad. Nick Saban's onto something when he says, Power Conference teams should only play other Power Conference teams in the non-con. And I completely agree. But until we open up the college football playoff, ADs and coaches will not be incentivized to do it, or you've got to mandate it. And all five of the power conferences have to do it together. Because it's ridiculous when Florida State will play Alabama and Florida, or Florida's going to play Florida State and Michigan, and then Penn State's going to play Pitt, Akron, and Georgia State. It's not okay. When Virginia's going to play UConn, Indiana, William & Mary, and Boise State. That's just not equitable. The dessert coordinator, Brad Heller, is on headlines today, and because he is a dessert savant, we've asked him to come in here as we prepare for your weekend, one of the last official summer weekends of the year. We're kind of counting them down for what the best desserts are. Here are the dessert coordinator's power rankings. All right, Brad Heller, now how many do you have here?
I've got five.
Okay.
Now, I put this list together quickly. Didn't take too much time to think about it, and by that I mean 24 hours of research. And
it wasn't like the College Football Playoff Committee.
No, but I had to put a little thought into this because there are a lot of options you can go with, and I have to be able to sort it out.
There's no doubt about it. You want to start at number five there?
Let's start at number five.
Okay. Number five.
I'm going to keep it simple here. Just need something quick, a standard candy bar, some kind of chocolate. I mean, there is a theme with my top five, but there's going to be some chocolate, a little peanut butter in there, some kind of, Reese's Pieces peanut butter cup, maybe something simple like M&M's. You need something on the go.
So your number five is a candy bar.
Yeah, just some kind of something small.
That's
nothing
a dessert.
Crazy.
Okay.
It can be for me, yeah.
Okay. Now, I would say I would highly encourage that to be in the freezer. I love a freezer half-frozen candy bar.
Yeah, for sure. You throw a Snickers in there.
Reese's Pieces.
Oh, yeah.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, rather. Delicious.
I'd go Reese's Peanut Butter Cup first.
I would agree.
York Peppermint Patty, underrated.
Oh, yeah. Especially half-frozen.
Totally.
Oh, my.
Can't count out Junior Mints, too, although I can't find them anywhere else but a movie theater for $12 a box. After you spend $25 on a ticket, you got to spend $12 on a box of Junior Mints.
All right, number four.
Number four.
Number four, I'm going to go with some kind of chocolate cake, either like a triple-layer blackout cake or
blackout
mousse.
Cake.
Oh, there's a blackout cake. It's actually sitting in my fridge at home.
Wow.
And I don't normally share dessert. I have a no-sharing dessert policy.
Oh, yeah.
Well. So there's a full-size, triple-layer chocolate blackout cake from a bakery near where I grew up. And that's up. Or chocolate mousse.
What makes it a blackout cake?
I mean, it's literally just layer upon layer of chocolate. You got chocolate frosting, then there's chocolate sprinkles, chocolate chips. I mean, it's pretty dangerous.
And then is the
you don't want to get stuck in a blackout. You don't want to get stuck eating too big pieces of cake.
Is the meat of the cake chocolate cake?
Yeah.
Whoa. So chocolate cake, chocolate icing, chocolate chips, chocolate frosting, chocolate sprinkles.
It's you name it, it's on
there.
That's
a blackout.
And chocolate mousse is also, I lump those two together because it's a cake of some kind.
You might black out after eating the blackout cake.
It's happened.
Okay.
It's happened.
Voice guy?
Number three.
Number three, I'm going to go with a brownie sundae.
Again, chocolate is a real
theme
here.
It's a theme. If there's not chocolate, it's not dessert in my world.
So, brownie sundae.
Yeah, now you can do your standard brownie sundae with, vanilla or chocolate ice cream and syrup and whipped cream and all that stuff. Or there's Cold Stone Creamery mashes a chocolate brownie into, like, their mint chocolate chip.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. It's heavy.
Do you like Cold Stone ice cream? I find Cold Stone to be a little too doughy of ice cream for me.
It is. I mean, this, like, mint chocolate chip brownie mix they got going on where they'll literally mash a brownie in front of you and then mix it with the mint chocolate chip ice cream. That's pretty outrageous, but you can't have too much of it.
It's delicious. The only thing is I don't know how you have a dairy product that beads like a cake batter. Like, how is that possible?
It's a lot.
Ice cream, if you tried to mash it together, would just, kind of start melting like dairy would, frozen dairy, but it like pulls apart like taffy.
I feel for the people that work there because it's like you almost need to pass a fitness test to be able to scrape out.
Yeah, it's tough.
And then they're just, they're kneading it down and mashing the brownie in there. Like, they're sweating.
Yeah.
They're sweating back
there. They've
got
to have real dexterity and then strong wrists and fingers and forearms.
I know. It's usually people that are training for like Ironman competitions. They do this like during the day as like their, you know, non-workout
activity.
No doubt. Activity.
Yeah, Cold Stone is
for
intense.
Sure. Yeah.
Cold Stone is intense.
Number two.
Thank you, voice guy.
Number two, I'm going to go with, this is a conversation we had with Miraz not too long ago. Just a frozen yogurt shop. Take the biggest bowl you can and load it up.
Now, for Miraz, he says you can't have any space in there.
I know. We got a little too much into, you know, geometry. And
yeah, Miraz isn't exactly Neil deGrasse Tyson here. He thinks that you actually pay for the empty space on weight because he thinks that space within frozen custard is weighted, but it's not.
He skipped that semester in geometry.
He's not here today. He's out today, so we couldn't get a validation here. But so you love, I love like a 16 candles, just pound all that frozen yogurt.
Yeah, give me a couple flavors, and then just you go to town on the toppings.
The toppings is where it's at.
It's like art for me. You got to spread it out. You got to get enough of everything. Top it off with some chocolate syrup, and you know, 3 pounds later, you're paying $30 at 16 handles for ice cream.
Just delicious.
Just delicious.
Number one.
And the number one dessert, according to the dessert coordinator, Brad Heller.
You can never go wrong with a soft chocolate chip cookie.
Oh, wow. So that's basic. So you're going kind of traditional, basic, old school.
Basic, soft chocolate chip cookie where maybe the chocolate chips or maybe they're still a little melted in there, maybe a little undercooked.
You know,
in
this
the middle
is,
there.
This is like the Penn State uniforms. You know, when we do uniform ranking, if you like traditional and you like simple, you go Penn State. What you're saying is chocolate chip cookie, the number one dessert because it's traditional and simple.
Yeah, give me, you know, the jersey I have at home. The one I cherish is the Derek Jeter pinstripe. You know, just the number two, no name on the back. And this is what the chocolate chip cookie is for me. There's a couple places in New York City, in Manhattan. We walked by one of them the other day that just do it right. I mean, the big cookies that with the chocolate chips that are a lot of chocolate chips that don't give me, you know, one or two chips in there. That's
no,
you're shortchanging me.
Yeah, we actually did a Nomad episode on this, on the chocolate chip cookie across the street. I forget the name of this bakery right here, but Miraz called it the greatest chocolate chip cookie he's ever had. It's like the size of his head and his chocolate chunks in there. I mean, it was remarkable. It's the Halloween episode of season one of Nomad, if you want to check that out on YouTube.
Yeah, and then there's another one. There's one by my apartment that does them even bigger. They're like scones. They're thick scone-like.
Thick, yeah.
Yeah. I think you've experienced that, too.
Well, I feel good, and I'm doing well.
And that's the dessert power rankings from dessert coordinator and dessert guru, Brad Heller. When we come back, your sound check, your best audio of the day.
You're listening to The DA Show, only on CBS Sports Radio.
Remember to stream the show, watch the show from your phone or your laptop or your desktop by going to watchda.com. It's in sparkling Technicolor on a daily basis. Plus, once we're off the air, it airs live, but once we're off the air, it airs on loop as well, the most recent episode. So you can check that out by going to watchda.com. There was a little lag there. My freaking microphone broke. The wire just popped right out. I guess we are really speaking some electricity into these microphones today.
Oh
yeah, you know it. Just zapping everything. Whew. Coming with a lot of power. Microphone just falling apart. Had to rehook it. So, coming up next hour on the show, Brian Baldinger is going to join us from NFL Network. A lot of stuff to get into via the NFL with Baldy. It's always good to catch up with him. We've also got a dumbership story for you next hour as well. And it's a Target Demo Friday. So I want to hear what you're up to as you prepare for the weekend, how you're listening, where you are. So hit me up on Twitter with that at DA on CBS or on Facebook at facebook.com/TheDAShow. And we will read those on air toward the end of the hour, next hour. But it's time for your best audio of the day. It's sound check.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
I'm rewatching the video clip because it's on a bit of a lag time at watchda.com of me trying to fix the microphone. It's pretty great. I think we have to just pull that off, edit that out, and post that on Facebook. Me trying to fix my own microphone. Let's start with Blake Bortles, who stunk again last night. Oh, no! We stink again! And even Doug Marrone said, okay, you know what? Enough is enough. It's now an open quarterback competition.
Whether you say it or not, I think at any position in the NFL, it's an open competition every single day. If there's a guy better than you that's not playing, he's going to play. And I think you have to go earn the right to start at your position. Nothing changes for me. It's the same thing. The mindset doesn't change. Obviously, tonight wasn't a good showcase at all. And, you know, I don't think anything will change. We'll come in tomorrow, watch it, and get to work on Saturday.
Oh, no! He stink again! That was Blake Bortles, and another lethargic, unimpressive performance last night of the preseason. And after the game, Doug Marrone said, okay, I've seen enough. Chad Henne and Blake Bortles, you're now equal. Which is crazy considering that Bortles was the starting quarterback the last 3 years. We know that Chad Henne's not all that good. We know that Blake Bortles is still in his physical prime. He was the number three pick of the draft as the franchise guy. And now with two preseason games left, Marrone's like, you know what? Even Stevens now, open quarterback competition. That's how bad you stink, Bortles. And that is pretty jarring. That is pretty jarring. I think Blake Bortles has been done in by two things. Number one, well, three things, actually. Number one, his own lackadaisical attitude. He has not stepped up to take that job. And I feel a little bit like I'm talking about Paxton Lynch, where in Denver, a young player that they want to win the job isn't doing so. There's got to be a desire, a commitment, and a want. And sometimes when you have been given the job, you lack some of those commitment abilities. And that's got to be on Blake Bortles, man. You've got to be better. You've got good wide receivers. You've got a good offense. Number two, problematic, is that this is not the regime that drafted Bortles. So Gus Bradley, who was going to keep him in there no matter what, and the previous regime who had drafted him, they don't have that loyalty. And now he is going to end up being on the outside looking in with Doug Marrone and Tom Coughlin, who said, well, we didn't draft you. We've got no loyalty to you. The owner does. Shad Khan wants him in there, but this management doesn't care. And number three, I think he was probably thrown to the wolves too early. That Blake Bortles was coming out of UCF, a smaller school, did not have the type of experience you probably need to start that early in his rookie season, and was thrown in there, probably developed some bad habits under a coaching regime that did not win a lot of football games, was not ready to do so, and probably carries some of that over into now year four. That's a bad situation in Jacksonville for Blake Bortles. Hugh Jackson the other day took some heat for saying he does not want any of his players to sit for the national anthem. Here was Hugh clarifying.
There are issues in our country right now that are far bigger than football, and I understand that and respect that as well. The issues do impact our players and will compel them to react in many different ways. My personal feelings is that over the last season, we've seen players come under unfair scrutiny for protesting during the anthem. Mainly because the focus has become on whether or not a player is being disrespectful to the flag or military, and not on the issue and cause attempting to be addressed by the protest. The intent of my comments was not to discourage individual expression from our players in light of a cause that moves them to personal expression.
Boy, everybody is doing this dance. Every coach and GM doing this dance. John Lynch, Pete Carroll, Hugh Jackson. This is the talking point. We want our players to express themselves. We know there are ills in this country, but we don't want them to sit for the national anthem. That's basically what they're all saying. We don't want them to sit, but we support their individuality and their beliefs. It's really uncomfortable for all these guys in power. It's really uncomfortable for all these, because all these owners hate it. They hate it. These 32 owners absolutely hated it. 31 and then Green Bay. They hate all of this. I mean, and like I've talked about before, I mean, these are 31 billionaire owners where America's been really good to them. I mean, it's been really good. So to disrespect the flag, they absolutely do not empathize with. And if it turns off some of their customers, they don't empathize with that. You know, so it's, hey, you never had to sit for the national anthem before, so don't sit now. And the coaches are right in that in-between where they need the players to believe that those coaches have their back. But the coaches getting pressed on by the owners, don't let them do this. And then also the media part of it where it becomes a quote-unquote distraction, although I think that's really overblown. I mean, the Niners weren't bad last year because of the media attention. The media attention to Kaepernick went away after a couple of weeks. Nobody even talks about Malcolm Jenkins in Philadelphia. I mean, nobody talked about the guys in Seattle that were doing it after a couple of weeks. That's really overblown. But this is this dance that is just going on within the power structure of the NFL. And finally, I was lamenting this yesterday, that baseball's become an all-or-nothing proposition. Here are the Cubs yesterday going back-to-back-to-back in a belly-to-belly-to-belly season.
Avila drives one in the air, deep left field. Back goes Duvall near the wall, and that's a home run. Cubs are coming back. Alex Avila, opposite field, two-run homer, and now it's a 9-4 ball game. Don't go away. Here's a drive into deep center field. Back goes Hamilton. This is a long home run. Being half for the second of the day, it's 9-5. And Javi drives one in the air. This is going to be another home run. Long gone. 9-6. 3 in a row by the Cubs. 4 in the inning and 5 home runs in the game.
That is Pat Hughes on Cubs Radio. Can you believe the Cubs hit back-to-back-to-back home runs and got another one in that inning and still lost? This is where baseball is. It's a home run derby. Hit a home run or strike out because that's where we're scoring runs. They lost that game 13-10, primarily because the Reds had 9 on the board before the Cubs had scored any. And that included a Joey Votto home run, then Hap home run that had a home run for the Cubs. Chris Bryant, Avila with the home run, Hap with another one, Baez hit a home run, Schwarber hit a home run. The Cubs were down 9-0 and hit 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 home runs to crawl within 9-7, and 5 of them were solo jobs. They hit 6 home runs, 5 were solo jobs to crawl back. That's what I'm talking about when it comes to baseball being all or nothing proposition and nobody being on base. And that is your sound check. Speaking of baseball, can I just take this moment to give Curtis Granderson the respect that this guy deserves?
Here's Granderson with power. First pitch hit deep to right field. Judge going back. It's on the way. Grand slam, Curtis Granderson. He hit it off the facing of the upper deck in right field, the Coca-Cola corner, and the Mets have turned this into a ball game. Granderson with a grand slam brings home Darnell, Reynolds, and Nimmo ahead of him, and suddenly with nobody out of the bottom of the ninth inning, it's the Yankees 7 and the Mets 5.
That was Howie Rose on Mets Radio. I was actually out at Citi Field last night for that game of the Subway Series. Yankees were up 7-0, 3-0 before I even got to my seat because there was a 3-run home run by Sanchez in the top of the first inning. And then it was 7-1 in the ninth inning. You had Granderson go yard, grand slam, made it 7-5, but that's how it would end. Curtis Granderson, despite only playing 4 years in a Mets uniform, and it looks like that maybe they might try to trade him before the trade deadline of the waiver trade deadline is done at the end of this month. In just 4 years, he's become one of my favorite Mets of all time. And I was going crazy last night, not because I thought the Mets were going to win that game. I mean, it brought them closer, but because this is a guy that has stepped up and had some really big hits, but also has been one of the greatest community activists I have ever seen. Charity and kids has been as important as baseball to him, and he deserves a big thumbs up.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.